This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is away. The arrest of Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. at his home in Cambridge has renewed a national discussion on race relations and law enforcement. There's a long history of tension between white police officers and black citizens, stretching from the civil rights protests to the beating of Rodney King to the New Year's Day shooting of Oscar Grant in Oakland, California. We still have two very different versions of what happened on that porch in Cambridge last week, but clearly it raises important questions. How are police officers trained to handle tense situations? What's the responsibility of the author? What is our responsibility and our rights as citizens? And how does ethnicity change the equation? We'll talk with the chief of police from Portland, Oregon, in a few minutes about what she sees in her department. And we want to hear from callers later in the program. But first, we turn to John Burris, who joins us from member station KQED in San Francisco. He is a civil rights attorney who was co-counsel in the Rodney King case. He's also the author of the book Blue Versus Black, Let's End the Conflict Between Cops and Minorities. Welcome to the program, Mr. Burris.
Good to be with you.
Now, you represented Rodney King, whose case, of course, marked a really significant moment in race relations in this country. You've represented many others as well. How common would you say is this experience of minorities who say they've been discriminated against by the police?
Well, that's a fairly common complaint that happens often. It's really a question of disparate policing that occurs. I have many, many cases in my office now. The fact that it happened to Professor Gates is fairly common. I've had that a lot, where a person is engaged in some kind of innocent behavior, and ultimately, even in trying to vindicate themselves, they wind up being physically arrested or even physically assaulted. That didn't happen in this case, but look, there has been a lot of efforts to improve police and community relationships. I certainly have been involved in that. I think progress is being made. But on the other hand, you still have a lot of it occurring on a routine basis, particularly in significant urban communities where there are large black populations, Hispanic populations. It is ongoing. And, you know, in my efforts, we try to work with this. We have to understand what police officers are trying to do, which I constantly try to advise. But you have situations where an officer assumes certain facts, given that they've been called to a situation, and before they allow a person to sort of advise and tell what their position is or to demonstrate that they're not engaged in unlawful activities, they frequently are treated in a very rough, aggressive manner. They're handcuffed, and if they resist in any way about why they're being treated this way, they are physically assaulted. So it happens a lot in this community, particularly in urban communities. I think in the black community, it is a fait accompli that this is the kind of conduct that's going to happen.
Let me ask you, why do you think these kinds of incidents escalate, and sometimes escalate terribly? Out of control, but
well, they escalate because I think there's a lack of appreciation. It's one of disrespect. Certainly in the African-American community, they feel like they're being disrespected. The police officers feel like they're not given the respect that they're due. And ultimately, these things come down, unfortunately, to a man-on-man situation because we don't see it much with women. We see it much more with white men and black men. And I think it's a question of disrespect that is the underpinning of all of this. And unfortunately, that's how it comes about. And we find very minor situations that escalate into situations where a person is physically assaulted and ultimately arrested, like in Mr. Gates's position, for a relatively minor and insignificant crime. And an arrest like this has long-term ramifications. Mr. Gates was fortunate. He was able to get out of this, but people wind up having to go to criminal courts and fight these charges, hire a lawyer, and then have to try to find out if their civil rights have been violated. So this kind of case can escalate. And unfortunately, I don't think enough consideration is given to the human side of individuals' ego, individuals' sense of self-respect. Because I think if you respected people and talk to them in a respectful way, you can de-escalate many of these situations that ultimately escalate out of control.
Well, you've written a book, Blue Versus Black, that makes some suggestions about how we can end the conflict between cops and minorities. What would you say is really key? What's the key to the ending?
The ultimate key to me, and it always has been, is communication. the ability to talk to people in a respectful way and get them to understand why you are doing what you're doing and giving them an opportunity to respond. Obviously, every situation is a little bit different, but I'll tell you, most situations would not occur if the officer talked to the person in a respectful way and tried to communicate.
It's called de-escalation. And what about if the person also speaks respectfully, too, I would say, because people get angry pretty quickly in these kinds of situations.
Absolutely. But most people I have found, if you treat them with respect, that is the police, they will respond in a respectful way. Obviously, you have situations where they can escalate out of control. But I'll tell you, if you communicate and just demonstrate that you understand and have some empathy for the person, why they're there and how you happen to get there, you can de-escalate and you can prevent most of these situations from occurring.
All right, Mr. Burris, thanks so much for joining us. Mm-hmm. John Burris joined us from member station KQED in San Francisco. He's a civil rights attorney and the author of the book Blue Versus Black, Let's End the Conflict Between Cops and Minorities. And joining us now is Rosie Sizer. She is the chief of police in Portland, Oregon, and she joins us from her office there. Thanks so much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Now, President Obama addressed Henry Louis Gates' arrest in his news conference last night. Let's listen to a bit of that tape now.
I don't know, not having been there and not seeing all the facts, what role race played in that. But I think it's fair to say, number one, any of us would be pretty angry. Number two, that the Cambridge police acted stupidly in arresting somebody when there was already proof that they were in their own home. And number three, what I think we know separate and apart from this incident, is that there is a long history in this country of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately. And that's just a fact.
Now, Ms. Sizer, we want to get into the question of race, but first let's talk about just the basics. What should happen when a person is confronted by an officer in their home? If you do offer proof that you live there, should that be the end of it?
In most cases, I think it is the end of it. The call for service that the officer responded to was what could be considered a burglary in progress or some suspicious activity. And in most cases, when an individual is able to present proof that they, in fact, live in the house, the call is resolved fairly quickly.
Now, I think it's fairly common, as the president said, people get angry in situations like this. There can be, an exchange of words, maybe raised voices. This would be before anything physical occurred, just raised voices. From a police officer's perspective, how should a police officer defuse a situation like that?
Well, ideally, you should be able to defuse a situation like this verbally. And very seldom resort to an arrest situation. I don't know the specifics of what happened.
And we don't want to get into the specifics of this case. I'm asking you in general how a police officer should handle any kind of situation where, the person involved is angry but not threatening, let's say.
Well, it really depends on the kind of a call you're responding to, the information you receive about the call, whether or not the suspect description indicates any violence, or whether or not the individual may be armed with a weapon. It's the facts surrounding that determine the appropriate response. So I think it's very hard to say very generally what the best response is, because it's very, very fact-specific.
Yeah. Do police departments in general have specific guidelines for dealing with that particular situation, with a situation where what you've really got at first is just an angry person?
Well, we have training doctrine, and we also have policies and procedures, but policies and procedures are often very much more general. Training doctrine and training practices often give police officers guidelines about how they respond to a wide variety of incidents. And we also depend upon their maturity and common sense to resolve situations in the best way possible.
Now, what happens when race is part of the equation here? I mean, what we've been talking about so far is just this could be anybody, a person of any race gets angry, heated words exchanged with the police. What happens when race is part of it?
Well, race is not uncommonly part of policing in America. And often it adds emotion, it adds distrust to an encounter that may already be difficult.
And what kind of training do officers have for specifically dealing with these situations when race is involved? Is there training?
I think there's very little training. I think there is more than there has been historically, but I think this is a fairly new venture for police departments. Most police training has been oriented in the past on giving officers background in law, in procedures, and on police tactics. I think there's been insufficient attention historically given to communications training and very little attention to how communications can sometimes break down in the heat of discussions of race.
Now, do you agree with what the president said, that is that blacks and Hispanics are stopped disproportionately by police, that there's a history of that in this country?
Well, for about the last 10 years, many police departments, especially large urban police departments, have been collecting data on their traffic stops. And most departments, including my own, show disproportionate stops based on race when measured against census data. I think most scholars also recognize census data is not a good benchmark for stops, but there really is not another benchmark.
Now, I know that you recently released a plan to address racial profiling in your city, Portland, and we're going to ask you about that when we return from a short break. So stay with us. We are talking with Rosie Zeiser, Chief of Police in Portland, Oregon, and we're talking about tensions between law enforcement and minorities. If you've experienced this directly, either as a police officer or a citizen, tell us your story. Call us at 800-989-8255 or send us an email to talk@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. A bit later in the program, actor Jeff Daniels joins us to talk about his new movie. But right now we're talking about cops, ethnicity, and a long history of tension in this country. If you've experienced this directly, either as a police officer or a citizen, tell us your story. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. The email is talk@npr.org, or you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. My guest is Rosie Zeiser. She's the Chief of Police of Portland, Oregon. And joining us now is Clarence Edwards. He was the first African-American Chief of Police in Montgomery County, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C., and he now works as a senior law enforcement and security consultant. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. First of all, I just was wondering, did you hear the president last night? And I was wondering what your reaction was to the comments that he made about the situation in Cambridge with Mr. Gates.
Yes, I heard his comments, and I happen to have lived in Boston from 1977 to 1979, so I'm somewhat familiar with the situation in the Boston area. Although Cambridge is considered a much better place for people of color than some areas of Boston. But I heard the president, and I think his statement was accurate.
Okay. We were talking with Chief Zeiser just before you joined us, and I was mentioning before the break, Chief Zeiser, that you came up with a plan to deal with racial profiling, and I wonder if you can tell us what's in that plan.
Well, we've been involved in a long discussion about race relations in my community the entire tenure of my chiefdom, I guess. And out of that discussion, we developed and presented a racial profiling plan. I can't say that this is all novel information. What I can say, it's a principled attempt to make things better, to build public trust between the police bureau and our community, particularly communities of color. And it's divided into four principal parts, one focusing on recruitment and hiring, one on data, a third section is on building relationships with minority communities, and fourth on training.
All right, Clarence Edwards, I wanted to ask you, continuing this discussion about racial profiling, do you, in your opinion, is it an exception, or is it really institutionalized racism?
In some instances, it's an exception, and in others, it's institutionalized racism. I think that the onus falls on the chief and the top echelon within the police department to set the stage by training and by strict enforcement when there is evidence that you have a problem officer, and frequently that's not the case.
Something I'd like to ask both of you, but let's start with you, Mr. Edwards, and that is kind of the weight of history here. The president alluded to that last night, or spoke pretty directly to that last night when he said that, you know, there is a history here of tension between people of color and police departments, a sense of that they are disproportionately picked on, let's say, by the police or targeted by the police. So how, as police officers, when you are dealing with these kinds of situations, how do you deal with that weight of history? How do you take that in and make that something that you can help your officers understand they have to deal with each time they go out on the street? Can you?
Well, one thing that I've emphasized over the years is that we have to do a better job of scrutinizing police applicants. I've advocated we use the polygraph exam to detect unlawful activity or drug use, but there, to my knowledge, are no questions on that that relate specifically to a person's attitude on race. And I think that's something that perhaps we need to look at. And I think your culture in the organization, you have to be constantly monitoring that to make sure that people who are coming on, people who are actively working the street, as well as your supervisors and managers, understand that this is something that's not going to be tolerated. Because if they see someone get away with it and somebody has that type of mentality, then it will happen.
So when you were chief of police in Montgomery County, Maryland, how did you work on that culture? I mean, do you institute programs? Is it a question of saying this is simply not allowed within the police department at all, certain kinds of language, certain kinds of attitudes towards other off? I mean, how do you change a culture?
Well, our training in Montgomery County was based on bringing community activists who respected people into the training academy to sit down and talk to your recruits and explain to them the concerns of the various different communities. Montgomery County has a significant Hispanic population as well as a black population. So we'd bring people in, and they would be a part of the discussions in recruit school and also in in-service. Because one of the things I've noticed over the years is in America, we don't know each other. And the people that don't know each other are apprehensive about each other and have fears, and we're trying to overcome those apprehensions and fears.
Chief Sizer, what about you, this whole idea of that it has to begin in the culture of the department?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. You talked about the history and the burden of history on minority communities and the police. Unfortunately, many newly hired officers are not aware of the history at all, and so I think it's incumbent upon us to teach them the history and teach them the various perspectives that exist around the issue and better prepare them for the stew that they're going to face on the street of race and class and politics and resentment. So they are they react in a way that is not turtling up and just being defensive and shutting down, or at the end of the spectrum reacting with anger when their moral authority is questioned.
Chief Edwards, is the weight of history so strong that, in fact, minorities can perceive that the situation involves race or is racist or is racial profiling when it really isn't?
It's possible in some instances, and that's brought about because people do encounter problems. I'll give you an example. I was chief of police. I'm in a suit, and I get on the elevator. There's a white woman on the elevator. She grabs her pocketbook and moves to the corner, changes her pocketbook over to the other side. So I started laughing, and I went into my vest pocket and came out with my credentials and badge. I said, "Lady, you don't have to be afraid of me. I'm chief of police."
Yeah.
Now, that's an example, and you have another example where Magic Johnson and another basketball player had a similar experience on an elevator. And when you multiply these things out over the lifespan of a person, people become pretty sensitive to that. Now, what I believe that our secondary education needs to do a better job of teaching our children about the history of slavery, about Jim Crow, and about all of those problematic areas in this country. We don't do that. And so, therefore, you can get an education through K through 12 and not have a clue about what is really going on in this country.
We are talking about race relations and law enforcement. Our guests are Clarence Edwards, the Montgomery County, Maryland's first African-American chief of police. He currently works as a senior law enforcement and security consultant. And we're also talking with Rosie Zeiser, chief of police in Portland, Oregon. We're going to take a call now from Jason, who's calling from Arkansas. Hi, Jason.
Hi. I totally agree with your speakers. The point that I'd like to make is that, you know, I'm a white guy, and I've had many experiences with the police, and in virtually all of them, they've been treated me, you know, disrespectfully. They've escalated the situation if I got upset about it. And I think that a lot of times minorities assume that their minority status is why that happens, when in actuality I think it's the way the police are trained to deal with a suspect.
Chief Zeiser, did you want to respond to that?
We've just gone through our in-service training annually, and we had instructors who really talked about that, cluing officers in that disrespectful communication is often interpreted by minorities as racial bias, when in fact the officer may be acting like a jerk, and maybe he or she routinely acts like a jerk. And so it really is incumbent on us to be respectful and professional in how we interact with everyone, even though we in turn do not always receive that behavior.
All right, let's take another call now. Thanks so much for your call, Jason.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to Paul, who's calling from Chicago. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I had an incident where when I was 14 years old in Chicago, I had an officer backhand me in my mouth, and it took the other two officers that he was working with to stop him from hitting me again.
And what was the situation that you were in? Were you being stopped for something, or?
No, I hopped the turnstile when I was a kid. We hopped the train like over the turnstile, and the thing is, I had a few bucks in my pocket, and he asked me why I did it, and I was just being a silly kid. And but he was being really rough with me, and he backhanded me in my mouth because I didn't respond to his question in a timely manner, I suppose.
And how did it end? Just when his partner intervened, then it was over?
Yeah, they gave him a really hard look, and they said, "Hey, you know, like what's your problem? Why don't you calm down?" You know, I mean, I was a 14-year-old kid, you know, so I guess they thought he was getting out of hand.
Yeah. Yeah, Chief Edwards, here's a case where you had two cops. One maybe did the right thing, one did the wrong thing.
Well, I'll give you a personal experience. When I was chief, I guess around 2:30 in the morning, I received a phone call from a female sergeant, and she indicated that one of our officers had done something very similar to what was just described, and she was reporting it to me. That wasn't the protocol, but she called me because she knew that I was very serious about incidents of this type, and she asked me will you support me? And I assured her that I would. This officer had had a number of problems, and he was his employment was terminated.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Paul.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. And let's go to Willie, who's calling from Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Willie.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. I was listening to you guys, and I drive trucks for a living. And I've had several incidents where I was stopped by officers out on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, I've had some, you know, that were pretty decent. But the majority of them were just downright rude. And automatically, I was to say nothing. I was to not make any wrong moves. I had one unsnap his gun on me. And, I mean, I'm standing there totally unarmed. And it's just like, it makes you feel violated. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Willie, are you African American?
Yes, I am.
And did you feel you were treated that way because of your race? Did you feel
racist? I honestly and truly believe that I was, because I'm 54 years old, you know, and I don't have to read a book to realize what I'm up against in some of these cases. You know? There's been several incidents out here over the years that I've had to just bite my lip and just look.
You just have to bite your lip. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Either that or go to jail or be shot. I had an officer. I'll give you one incident that happened out in California. I was driving a truck that was governed at 63 miles an hour. Well, the officer stopped me and told me that I was doing 72 miles an hour. Well, I told him, I said, man, the truck is governed at 63. It won't go any faster than that. And before I could do anything else, the man unsnapped his gun, stepped back, and asked me if I had anything else to say.
Wow. That scared me. You know what? I got scared just hearing you say that.
Yeah, and I'm out there on the side of the road, you know, with a man with a gun, nobody else around but him and me on the back side of the truck. I mean, you can imagine how I felt.
Yeah. You know? Willie, I'm going to get our guests to respond to your story. I thank you for calling in. And I want to remind our audience that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Okay, I guess let's go to you, Chief Sizer. You know, here is a really good example of a man. He said, I'm alone on the side of the road, and, you know, the guy heads towards his gun when he hasn't really done anything, it sounds like. Are you still there, Chief Sizer?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
What's your reaction to that situation, and why does that happen, and how can it not happen?
Well, I really don't think it's fair to put me in the position of second-guessing what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's important for police officers when they hear stories and they were not there and they don't know is to honor the perspective of the person who's telling the story and take into consideration how they can respond appropriately in the job they do every day.
Okay. I have an email here from Dave in New Hampshire. I was a law enforcement officer in New Hampshire for a number of years in the 90s. I had only a single run-in with race, as New Hampshire is not known for its diversity. I stopped a car at 10 p.m. traveling east on a road in town. The car was traveling over 20 miles per hour over the speed limit. I approached the vehicle, and the driver immediately started yelling at me, telling me I stopped him due to his race. Now, at the closing speed, the headlights on, I would have had a hard time telling the color of the vehicle, let alone the driver. He immediately played the race card and was extremely confrontational. I had a great deal of difficulty in calming him down. I also was torn between writing the ticket and reinforcing his mindset that cops were out to get him or letting him go, and reinforcing the race card play as a way to shame the police into letting you get away with bad behavior. I let him off with a warning, but he pushed every button. Clarence Edwards, clearly this, we're not going to resolve this right here, right now, in the next minute, but is there one thing you would leave, a thought you would leave us with to how you diffuse these kinds of tense situations from both sides?
Well, one thing that I think police officers have to be cognizant of is the fact that when a person is threatened with a ticket, they'll use whatever ploy that they feel will work. And by the same token, police officers can't, I don't believe, should be so thin-skinned as to allow someone to get them to do something that they perhaps would not have done. If you were not going to in a certain set of circumstances where you were not going to issue a ticket, then don't issue a ticket simply because the person made you angry.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today. Clarence Edwards is Montgomery County, Maryland's first African-American chief of police. And we were also joined with Rosie Sizer, the chief of police of Portland, Oregon. Thanks to both of you for being with us. And up next, Jeff Daniels. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.